between them.
Okay.
She never known to close it.
I see. Okay.
Yeah. And if any wishes of time, I'll hand over to Patricia and I'll hand over the present. Patricia.
Thank you, Chin. Thank the honorable members. I already members don't have copies of the bill, so I'm just going to try to briefly put the bill into perspective. I realize that also that members may not have had a chance to read the document I prepared, so this is also just to familiarize members with how I present information in the paper, but I'll try to be as concise as possible. Members may be aware that in 2009, the first time that Parliament dealt with the Forensic Seizures Amendment Bill, and that was still with the third Parliament. And the third Parliament, the ad hoc committee that was formed to deal with that bill, did not have enough time to finalize their work on the bill. They had done quite some work on the bill. They had public hearings. They visited the forensics laboratories. They met with staff and other stakeholders. Myself and other members of the research unit, we made presentations to the committee. So when the committee, they couldn't finalize the bill, it recommended that the fourth parliament deal with that particular bill. So in 2009, when the fourth parliament was established, the bill was reintroduced and referred to the portfolio committee on police. And then the members may recall that what happened with that bill, it dealt with not only DNA, but also with fingerprinting. And members will recall that we dealt with a bill that dealt with fingerprints and body prints. Because what the portfolio committee decided at the time was there was not enough information that they felt, or sufficient information, that they could comfortably deal with issues of DNA in that particular bill. That's why they decided to postpone that particular part and just deal with the fingerprinting bill, which was the bill that was passed in 2010, the following year. So following the decision of the portfolio committee not to deal with the DNA and only to pass the fingerprinting bill, in 2011, the portfolio committee then decided to embark on a study tour. And if members read this document that I prepared dated the 3rd of September, he actually recommends that this document is just an overview of what is in the bill and also just give a breakdown of the historical developments of how we got to this point now where we're dealing with the 2013 bill. So the portfolio committee went on a study tour and part of delegation included members from the head of quality assurance at the Forensic Lab, and also the federal advisors that were responsible for drafting the bill, and obviously the portfolio committee itself, under the leadership of Honorable Chikunga at the time, and myself, I was also part of that delegation. So we went to Canada and we went to the United Kingdom. And in this document, I also refer members to that part of the study report where they discussed the issues that were raised or that came out out of that study tour. What is important, I think, the report points out that the expectations around DNA and what it can do have to be realistic. First of all, we understand the value, the evidential value of DNA in the criminal proceedings. It can be used to prove the guilt or innocence of a person. It's a tool, an investigative tool, but it must be accompanied by proper investigation. They must be ensured that the crime scene and the samples are not contaminated, and the chain of custody from the time that samples are taken up to the point that it gets sent to the forensics lab and analyzed. That is also very important to ensure that there's nothing that happens during that period that can contaminate the samples, which would then make the evidence being questioned in court. And then the other thing that was found in the during that from that report was that DNA was found to be more useful when it came to property crimes, like breaking and entry, but not so less useful when it came to serious crimes. and in particular with rape cases. One of the issues that was raised was, if you have a multiple perpetrator, like in gang rapes, then DNA is basically not helpful at all because it will be impossible to determine who was the perpetrators. So those are some of the issues. And then the other one important thing is we have fingerprints. Fingerprints have been used over 100 years. On its own, it can stand as evidence in court because every person has a unique fingerprint. No two people have the same fingerprint. But with DNA, it is possible for two people to have similar DNA. Like if you have twins, twins will have the same DNA. So, which makes it even more important that when the police investigate a matter, they must be able to put that DNA discovery, that evidence, in context of the whole case, to build up that case. And what the report also points out is that the value of fingerprints must, the police, now that it has expanded its database, to it now has access to the Department of Transport and Home Affairs, so that increase the number of fingerprints that they can do search against. So the report then points out that that is also a very valuable crime-fighting tool that must be used in conjunction with DNA. But it's cautioned that, you know, it's not a silver bullet that's now going to solve all the crimes. There are certain precautions that must be taken, there are certain rules that must be followed. Of importance is ensuring the integrity of the sample and making sure that nothing contaminates it. So those are the basic findings, and I think those findings are relevant for going forward, and how the police and the forensic lab is going to deal with the issue of DNA. Thank you. Briefly, I just want to maybe touch on a few things that came out on the portfolio committee. The portfolio committee referred the bill to us, B-Bill, so they made a few changes. One of them is the memorandum on the option of the bill, usually found at the end of the bill. And in there, they included a section, a table that sets out the costing that sets the virus. And so it gives you the costing over 3 years. It is stated in this table that by the end of 2015-16, it will have cost 1.26 billion rand. And over that will be the figure that is provided over 3 years. If I can break it down, in 2013-14, it's going to cost 182.63 million. 2014-15, 535.17 million. In 2015-16, 546.96 million. I should maybe also mention that the Peace and Peace was not really happy with figures presented by SAPS. But nevertheless, it recommended to the NA to pass the bill because it realized that the process that started in 2009 already, and obviously there is a need for a bill because the policy decision has been taken that South Africa needs to establish a DNA database. That is what the bill does. Currently, we don't have a DNA database. The Department of Justice and in the criminal justice system, we do use DNA evidence, but on a case-by-case basis. So what the DNA, establishment of a DNA database will do is create different indexes. In the case where the board has created 6 different indexes, and one will be the crime scene index where samples from collected from a crime scene, they will analyze those samples and load it onto a database. And the next one is an arrested person's database where what the board proposes that every person that is arrested, their DNA gets taken, and what the board also does, it authorizes a person that can take a sample from a person is a police official or also a member of IPED, but they must have undergone training provided by a Minister of Health as prescribed in the Act. So what we then foresee is that they will take a buckle swab, which is basically a cotton bud that they rub on the inside of the cheek, and they seal that sample, and that sample will then be sent to the forensic lab. So that will be arrested persons. And then there's also a convicted offender index. In terms of what the bill says and what came out in the debate on the when the bill was considered in the National Assembly is that the SAT will conclude a memorandum of understanding with the Department of Correctional Services to allow the DNA of all persons in correctional facilities their DNA to take it. So it will include people who are sentenced or unsentenced, so whether they are in remand or whether they are convicted, their DNA will be taken and loaded on an index. So if they are on demand, I would assume that their DNA will profile will be loaded on the arrested person index, and convicted persons will be on the convicted persons index. And then there's also another index which is called the investigative index. Now in this one, an investigator which are the opinion that a person or a group of persons are taking, may have been already involved in a crime, that person on suspicion can approach the person or group of persons, RTD, can take their DNA, and they must give consent. If no consent is given, then a warrant must be obtained from a magistrate. So what's important with this one is that there must be consent for samples to be loaded, for profiles to be loaded onto the investigative index. And for deliberating on the bill, members will obviously interrogate the circumstances under which a person can be suspected of illicit loitering on the corner. What are the factors that investigator must take into account to consider that it would be beneficial to take the DNA? Because there are some considerations of, you know, constitutional rights, you know, how are we going to be sure that people are not just seen on the corner and then requested to give the DNA? And also, what is consent? Informed consent, will the person know that he has a right to say, no, you can't take my DNA? So during the deliberation, members will obviously interact with SAT on those issues. And then the other one is elimination index. If members go at a crime scene, and in this document that I provide some pictures on page 6 and 7, where normally these are the kinds of images that you find at a crime scene. So at a crime scene, there will be various things that they will, evidence that they collect, but these people will also be moving around on the crime scene, some of the police officers. So what the bill proposes is that to eliminate those who are working with the samples from the police side to ensure that they are not now loaded onto a suspect or a arrested person index, that there will be an elimination index to make sure that these people are eliminated from being suspect in that particular crime. And the other one obviously is the missing persons index, where the police will be able to conduct searches to help to identify bodies or to help trace missing persons. So the other important thing about the bill is it applies retrospectively. And the retrospective part is to make it applicable to people who are already in correctional facilities to allow such to have their DNA taken. And then obviously I spoke earlier about the importance to ensure that the samples are not contaminated in any way so that evidence cannot be questioned in court at a later date. And then important is the bill provides for penalties for offences committed in connection with the database, either tampering with the database or samples. And it proposes imprisonment of 15 years or a fine if it's not a natural person. And the Civilian Secretariat of Police, who is the oversight and monitoring body, it is responsible for ensuring that public awareness programs are run and that there are training programs that must be done to make the public aware. Also, the police, among the police themselves, that they are aware about what the bill is about to do and what their responsibilities are going to be in response to this. So basically, those are the main provisions of the bill. One other thing that the bill does is establishes an oversight and ethics board, and it will consist of no more than 10 people, and who must be appointed by the minister. And some of them will comprise of people who work in, who are experts in the forensics field. So at the moment we have civilians, and members will be able to interrogate why they decided on the combination as it out on the composition of that board. But just in closing, maybe for members to consider is, obviously the costing is an issue, but maybe just something to consider also is if the bill establishes an index for arrested persons, and every police station arrests people on a daily basis, there obviously is the possibility that those samples must now all be sent to the forensics laboratory for analysis, and they already have cases that they are working on. So it would just be maybe expedient to establish from SAPS and the forensics laboratory. How are they going to ensure that there isn't a backlog that's going to be created? Because if a police station arrests people every single day, and they send their DNA every single day, and that is sent on a daily basis to the labs, it's a lot of analysis that must be done. So how are they going to ensure that that process runs smoothly, to ensure that there's no backlogs that are to take place? And then obviously the issue of oversight and monitoring from Parliament side. The Department of Police have been requested on a quarterly basis to provide a report, especially on the expenditure issue, because as I said, the PC and police were not very happy with the projections that the police provided. So that is also something that the committee can interact with the department. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair.
Okay, there has been some concerns raised by the Human Rights Commission. Those concerns weren't dealt with by the Portfolio Committee on Police. And those are issues around the right to privacy, because arrested persons, because there's always the possibility that you can be found not guilty in court, and how long does the state have the right to keep your DNA. So those are some of the issues that they raised. They also raised the issue of without warrant, but the new amendments take that into account. There has to be a warrant. The question of the severity of the crimes, the schedule of offences makes no distinction, they argue. And then they also say that these offences do not all justify a particular limitation on the right to privacy. So the other issue that they do raise is the bill does talk about the prerequisites about how police officers are going to be trained by the Department of Health, what they're going to be thinking. And they are suggesting that when it comes to this authorized persons clause, that the senior officials only must be able to take those buckle swabs, rather than every police officer. And then what happens with this bodily sample and for how long they're able to keep it. Okay, I'm not going to go through all of it, but there is some machines which we will make available to everybody. And I think it will be useful if we give the Human Rights Commission to address the committee when we talk about the process. Thank you.
Okay. And we also continue with the presenters.
Chair, and honourable members, the minister is required to submit the department for concurrent policy guidance for the selection of national priority offences by the head of the DPCI and the National Commission of SAPS.
No, Martin. Do you want to raise some issues? Okay.
Yeah. So the first issue I wanted to raise is the issue around the budget. Now, the indication is it must apply retrospectively. One, and if you say it applies retrospectively, it means all persons that are detained now. They must go through that particular process. At what cost? What is the cost? You see? And I thought what will give us is, because we know in correctional services there are so many people, and what will be the cost then? Because if you're saying people are arrested on a daily basis, they must be forensic evidence, there is forensic, something has been taken from them, you know, that will be the second question. Now you can quantify the three issue. I'm just saying, because we also raised a question around a backlog. Presently, we're also not sure as to how many people have been trained within SARS to deal with forensic evidence, you know, and how long will it take and what training must go in, take place. If this passes today, what will be the process? You see, I'm just checking so that when we deal with SARS, you know, we have some of this information given to us so that SARS can give us the answers towards this particular process. Thank you.
Just a moment, Honorable Nurse. Can you quickly respond to this?
Yes, Chair.
Chair, once we were thinking about the training, is there training that has been done properly for people which are going to be dealing with the DNA and the fingerprints? And then secondly, what I was thinking that as a committee, maybe we need to talk to the department, including us, that I remember when we were in Germany, I'm trying to use this, that because when we were in Germany, they said to us, the requirement for policemen, it was a degree, and hence the salaries were high. Now, I think we are getting sophisticated as a country, and if we are getting that sort of sophistication, obviously we need to look at the entry points to SARS. What are the qualifications that we need? Because it means we need expertise to ensure that what this bill is proposing will be successful for SARS. Hence, I think it's related to Matilda's issue, Honorable Matilda's question, that you will have to talk about budget. For instance, how much are you going to pay the police? That's why it's going to be, how much are you going to pay the police, particularly those which will be dealing with these things, because these will be, they will be specialized. So I'm trying to say, if also we can be honest with the information around that, or as the committee, we suggest that the bill, whilst it's coming, it must come together with this package of how we address these other issues. Because the folks in that training, Commissioner, I'll be very careful, because we are here. In their training, I don't think they are being trained about these things of DNA. They are trained about the gun and other stuff they are doing. And these things, they come in the process. So it's supposed to mean that it means from Hammerstall, where they are being trained, so Commissioner knows where they train them. Then they must, these things be part of the broader package, including in their colleges, so that you don't expect the Department of Health later to assist them, or anyone, any department else, but everything must be started from the basis. And the person I'm trying to say, I'm comfortable with whatever is being said here, but I think it needs to be backed by a lot of things so that it be successful. I think the way we are doing things in South Africa, I mean, it's high time that we raise these things. The way we are doing things in South Africa is correct, but we are behaving like these first world countries. Once we are not, in that we are doing as they do, and even our researches are based on what they are doing, but if you look at their standards and other things, are far from them. Hence I'm saying the budget issue that Matthias raised in terms of being the police, the specialization, the training, and the education in the colleges where they are being trained is very, very important. But those things issues be clarified, I mean, for us, and also we can recommend that they be applied. Thank you very much.
Patricia.
Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you, members, for the question, because those are exactly the questions that the committee should be raising with the police. I know as the committee on police has started meeting with SAS about establishing a university because to train members. So, you know, as a committee, we can request steps to also, when they brief us on the bill, to also discuss the issue of training and what kind of courses the university will be conducting, especially around the issue of DNA. When I was part of the ad hoc committee that visited the forensics laboratories, we asked them on the issue of forensic scientists. And we know that SAS has ordered forensic laboratories itself has increased the number of that added some training courses to try and bridge that gap in terms of training those who are first on the scene. We had the crime scene exams, and they've had a certain level of success in addressing some backlogs. But we've requested that there should be a representative from the forensics lab to be part of the delegation that will brief the committee. Hopefully, that person will also be here to answer questions relating to the laboratory itself, or the issue of how many new posts they created to address the, to prepare, because if one looks at, since 2009, SAS has known that it has introduced legislation which has not been passed yet, but there was, that process had to be set in motion to prepare for the eventuality of the bill being passed in Parliament. So now it's 2013. So from that time to now, SAS has to give an indication as to what it has done. If one looks at what the memorandum, there's only a table, a very short table included in the memorandum with the breakdown of Girls Cosmos, Honourable Matilda. And from the budget, or rather the debate in the NA, I was able to determine that it would, as indicated, it would take 551 days to get the DNA database up and running. That's just over a year and a half. And the issue of the fact that in the criminal justice cluster, there has been millions, if not billions, spent on ICT technology, and even for SAS itself, this committee has been dealing with SAS and justice on, and know how much every year they budget for ICT. That was one of the criticisms raised by the portfolio committee, that from that time to now, there's no integration that one can really see, and that was raised as a concern for implementation of this bill in particular, because the departments are not integrated in their system, and that is one of the reasons why they decided to make the bill apply retrospectively to allow for the taking of DNA of those people who are in correctional services at the time probably that the bill comes into operation. So, and that is also one of the reasons why SAPS has been requested to submit on a quarterly basis the expenditure projections, because the criticism that was raised by the portfolio committee was that the projections, they were not happy with how SAPS set out what it's going to cost. SAPS could not really or the picture that SAPS presented, it wasn't satisfied that it's actually the actual cost and that it would monitor the process. So in order to avoid the legislation being delayed much longer, it decided to pass the bill, the NA, provided and SAPS then must on a quarterly basis come to Parliament and report on this is what we're doing regarding the implementation of the bill and this is our projections, you know, how much we spend and going forward.
Honourable Matilda, Honourable Mukhobi, Commissioner.
Chair, the expectation from a research point of view was that, I think that one advantage is there that our researcher was part of the study tour and all that. But what we expected in terms of the bill and in terms of the entire process, in terms of the briefing now, you know, is the issues we are raising. At this point in time, how many people have been trained? How many people are needed? What process, you know, so that when we go to the department and ask those particular questions, you have then given us some picture around those specific issues I'm raising now. You know, I mean, they have been dealing with forensic issues for quite some time. There was a backlog, we were told there are these particular problems. We were rightfully raising the issue around ICT. We were told something more than $12 billion has been spent on ICT and that system is not working. You know, we remember the last time we were writing here, which is a problem, you know. Now we need to link all these issues and then say, is that ready? You know. Now, you are raising an issue around a university. How long will it take to train just one person or people within us who will deal with some of these issues? You know, because we need to have an idea so that we deal with the department. Because it does not help just passing a bill for the sake of passing a bill. And then we sit with a lot of problems at the end of the day. I'm asking you, Kitting, so that, you know, as and the research situation must help us to deal with this situation so that us can keep on its toes. So that in terms of our oversight role, we are able to deal with some of the issues that have been raised. And that is the expectation that I had. I'm not sure, in terms of this particular policy, you know, to say, these are the backlogs, these are the problems, these are the issues, this is where we think, you know, so that we have an idea as to how we deal with this particular matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you,
Chair.
I know
you... The approach will take up long. Okay. Yeah. Because I wouldn't like a situation where the contract driver after on behalf of SAPS. They are still coming. I would suggest to say there are critical issues that contract is, which can be noted. And also the research and the content assist in critical questions that we will use to probe the department. Because others will probe her or whatever. It's not a write-up. But the issue that he raises is noted, and they assist it. And the category, they also come with some questions that he raises. They also, in their experience, raise critical legal issues. And what is it that the SUOP must pass a code or a public code? What are those issues? So that they expose those things. Therefore, the members will be able to use that one as a framework to engage the subs, in my view.
I'm covered with Honorable Matila and Honorable Manukhobi. What I wanted to add is that, as Honorable Nancy said, you know, always it's a failed fire in the prison as far as the training are concerned. Because they will just get one person somewhere, come and give you a correction course. That's good for this fingerprints and much, you know. So that one will come just for a week. That's why you call the people for fingerprints and everything. They will never come. They know that, no, that I'm able to do. I suppose the statement that, no, the police, when they come, we just add, more especially, the making of the establishing the database. The criminal procedure put it clear that you cannot just simply go to a person and say, okay, I want to, as long as that person is suspected, having much, I could use the criminal procedure, having much, and everybody sort of be able to say, no, that person is being suspected. He's been arrested there, but he's the one who raped or who does this thing. That will be able to come with an affidavit to give to the result so that must be able to take the samples of the DNA. Not just simply blank up. Thanks.
Honorable Mkhori, Honorable Mazini, Honorable Nes.
Yeah, I think one other issue or three emphasized by Matina and Nes, this training issue. That there is Kapapari University matter. What is that? What does that mean? It means the crash course, it means the tuning program, workshop, what does that mean? Because these are all the things that the researcher should collate
for us to question. To question the right department about that. These things are important, they must be voted, you know, so that they work on something that will give us as members as our tool to engage. But we must be open to also understand what is the objective, what is it that we must achieve as is associated on the concurrent information. We also need to do so that we are not just endorsing the NA. We also have our own independent thinking, you know. So those things must come out. And so that we are accepting the people.
Thank you, sir. I want to show from our research how watertight is this issue of the DNA in the service. Because when starting a thing, we have to know maybe about the successes, maybe and even the weaknesses. Because I think here it involves money. Like, for example, let's say I'm suspected and everything is done on me. Let's find that at long last I am not found guilty. Is it not going to cost the staffs more money than maybe checking exactly what is it all about? So maybe because people have to sue sometimes if they are not found guilty. So I want to know about this tightness of this issue. And even the training of the staff members. Because when checking actually crimes and stats, we find that criminals are sometimes not found guilty because of poor writing of statements and the like by police. So if they are going to be trained there, I think effectively, then it's going to give us a correct issue that no, this is watertight. Thank you.
Honorable Lesser.
I'm worried about Honorable Louis coughing that corner. I don't want him to die silently there, not knowing what's going on. My stomach has a problem. Then, I want to agree with Honorable Mukhobi that, in fact, we are not asking her questions. What's happening in our tools? But she also assists us in the process. But also, I want to suggest that whatever we are asking, as long as she is nodding that these are important questions. Because we are getting to the content of these things. Now, there is a point there that has been raised by the content advisor that Human Rights Commission. You see, we have to balance this thing with the Constitution. Now, when the department is coming saying randomly, they are going to do as if they are such thing. I mean, taking these DNAs, every person that they arrest. I mean, those are the issues that we're supposed to raise with them. What I was going to suggest after Honorable Mukhobi has suggested is that the more they help us in terms of writing, what are these critical issues? In fact, because of a few things that have been said here now, I'm very clear. For instance, this thing of universities. We know that there are only two universities that have been budgeted by this country, by this government.
Northwest
and Mpumalanga. And this one? Where is this one? It's not that we don't want to adopt the bill. We don't want to pass the bill to make sure that the bill is passed. But if we're going to pass for the sake of passing, what are we saying about ourselves? I mean, it means we are taking a burden for other people which are going to come because those things weren't working. So I just agree with everybody who says let content advisor in there prepare these questions. As long as we've got documents we are going to read. Fortunately, I mean some of the things have just cleared for ourselves right here now. So that we can engage the department properly and understand what they are talking about. Because it would be incorrect. I mean, you know what I'm usually doing? I'm watching TV and there's soapies. Last night I was watching Seed of Mangaoo. There's a silly, I don't know the silly is a soap. Seed of Mangaoo. Same thing about the police. Someone was killed, found on the river, and these kids didn't go to school. They found the person there. The ones who were in the police station are laughing to people who are coming and reporting. The others that are investigating are killing the evidence themselves because of their actions. Of one reason, in fact, what they are trying to show is in that field, it's this training, this crash course. Because the police is new, so when they find a person dead, she vomited. And they were asking, why did you vomit? I was not trained, and I've got, you see, they are not protected. Hence, it's very difficult for many things. This is what I've read, I mean, when I was looking at that soap. So my suggestion is that let us emphasize strictly on this thing of training, and there must be evidence where it's going to be done. Let us not be told about university, which we don't know in terms of the budget of this country yet. It has never been said by the president, the university of the police. Now the police, they have it. Where and how are they going to do it? I think we need to be very strict and clear about that. And we can further propose that the existing training colleagues of the police can be used, and they can just staff it with the necessary people which can train these people that might be able to do this. Instead of promising something that is not going to happen in the near future, then it's
But thank you. I just want to attempt to my proposal in terms of how we can take this forward for the members. This is Mr. Makita and Mr. Makhobe. I have a list of proposed questions, but I can really see the themes is very clear, and maybe we can concur on that tomorrow. The budget, issues around the budget, the issues around training, deep-centered issues, issues around application of human rights. The special provisions around children and women in the Bolshevik. And those are one of the key issues that the Human Rights Commission is also raising. What special provisions are there? How long do you keep the DNA of a child, for instance? In the Bolshevik, there's also a provision that the special commander must, within 30 days of them having taken DNA evidence, submit that for forensic analysis. Now, what the bill is silent on is, what are the consequences if the special commander does not submit it? You have to talk about those particular consequences for special commanders. If you look at the evidence rooms, it's piling up with evidence and nothing happens to it. There's firearms and drugs and everything in it. And then there's an additional issue that I just want to raise, in a way that you can clone fingerprints as the case in Stellenbosch, the killing of a Stellenbosch, a child, I can't remember the name, was. Can you clone DNA evidence as a police officer? And that's really something that must be addressed. Because you hold DNA evidence of, if Mr. Martillo has got the commissioner's DNA, can he as a police officer use that to plant him and to make him appear in another scene? So those are some of the key issues that the committee has considered. But I'll write this up and then tomorrow morning before the meeting to go over it.
Thank you, Jay. Just to address Mr. Mandini's, and I think fits in with what Irvin is raising. When I was talking earlier on, I mentioned that what came out of the study report was the fact that it was emphasized that DNA is an investigative tool, but it cannot be used on its own. It must be supported by corroborative evidence. So, which means the police investigation must be done thoroughly. And if members will recall, I also talked about the importance of ensuring that the crime scene is not contaminated. Because once the crime scene is contaminated, as was, the honorable member was illustrating now, it contaminates the sample, which means that if that matter comes to court, the defense will then be able to question, how sound the prosecution case is. So, DNA, like fingerprints, any evidence that the state presents to support this case, it's used to support the state case, but it can also be used to prove that a person is innocent. So it can work both ways. I can prove that person is guilty, but can also prove that I'm not guilty. So if DNA, if all the procedures were followed correctly, and the DNA was taken and taken into account, the whole investigative report and all that, it can also show that I'm not the person that could possibly have done the crime that I've been accused of. So just to also, I've noted Honorable Matilda's questions about the the issue of the funding, because tomorrow will be the first time that SAT will come to present, and when they sent it to the Eastern Police, they came with cost projections, so they haven't met with our committee to give us those figures. So I didn't want to use the information that was given to the Eastern Police, and I also noted that the minister hasn't yet had a chance to interact with the bill, so I also didn't want to, you know, overburden the members with information. But I do note that the document that I've prepared must be read in conjunction with the statutory report, because it contains quite a lot of issues, especially around the human rights issue. The concerns that were raised around database, whose profile should be kept on there, and how long can they be kept on there? Because there was a court case in the United Kingdom where the human rights, International Human Rights Court, found that innocent people's DNA were kept on the DNA database. Thousands of people were innocent. Their DNA was kept on the database, and that was challenged, and the court ruled in favor and instructed the United Kingdom government to remove those profiles. So, the issue of the different indexes, that's why when I was saying, these are just things to consider when members interact with the bill and they talk about a arrested person's index. What it means is that every person who is arrested, his or her DNA will be taken. Then obviously there's the practical implications of that, but then also there's the human rights and ethical questions that arise. And as members deliberate on those issues during the course of the bill, ultimately what the committee will then propose in terms of whether it will amend the bill or whether it will not amend those provisions will be informed by, the considerations around those issues when members deliberate on the bill. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Nessie.
I thought I was going to raise this thing. And the first thing of the sentencing, 15 years. Now, it is not threatening the human that are reading anything. I doubt it does. So I wanted us, I'm not sure how do we do that, but I wanted us as the committee to consider raising this issue of 15 years up a little bit. Even if it's 2025, but the quality advisor can also look into that, I mean, constitutionally and otherwise. Especially someone who rapes a child of 4 to 3 years and be told that your minimum is 15 years. That is nothing. I'm just trying to say if we can also in the bill try to put more pressure so that, I mean, the department will take the bill up and say that we are going up with the bill. We make sure that the sentences are too high for rape and killing of people. Thank you.
So just to clarify, that the penalties in the bill is not related to the people who are accused of rape or other crimes. It's actually the people who work with the DNA, like the forensic laboratories and the police personnel. One of the considerations for the sentence was that to discourage, for instance, police officers to supply DNA to insurance companies who may want to know that kind of information. So the penalties are ready for the people who work with the DNA.
I have
it
from the continuous so briefly.
The guidelines must be read together with the SAPS Act and the regulations. And Section 7K of the SAPS Act defines what national priority offences are. It defines as organised crime that requires national prevention or investigation, or crimes that require special skills in the prevention of or the investigation of, in terms of Section 16 of one of the steps act. Now, the policy guidelines provide for the head of the works of the DPCI to focus on what you know, what's called serious high-level crimes. The selection of such serious crimes must be informed by crime threat assessments. They have to look at the business processes of crime, really, and the threats that it poses to be able to investigate. And also the head of the DPCI must conclude operational protocols with relevant provincial and divisional commissioners on matters that must be addressed by the DPCI. Section 6.4 of the guidelines provide that the offences are selected, that must be national priority offences in terms of Section 17A of the South African Police Service Act. And those offences must be aligned with the strategic priorities of the SAPS and the National Minister. Chair, the selection of the offences must comply with the following. The offences must be committed by a person or a group of persons. Or syndicate involved acting in an organized fashion or a manner which could result in substantial gain for the person, group or syndicate. Now, the guidelines also talk about what organized fashion means. The offense must be committed or planned in more than one province or outside the borders of the Republic by the state perpetrators. The offense has an impact on the revenue or expenditure of the national government, and that the offense has an impact on the national economy or integrity of currencies in the country. And the investigation of an offence is requested by an international police agency or police agency of a foreign country. And then offences that are that involve mutual legal assistance or extradition. These are countries and UN protocols, for instance, that must be observed. And then an offence whose investigation requires specialised skills, which only the DPCI can source. Then you have a category of offences that must be addressed by the DPCI. Those are high treason, that means there's no discretion here. Restitution, any offence referred to in paragraph A of the specified offence in the Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorism, Terrorist and the Related Activities Act. Any offence referred to in Schedule 1 to the implementation of the Rome Statute of the International Criminal Court. And then any offence referred to in the Non-Proliferation of the Weapons of Mass Destruction Act of 1993. These are all international protocols that South Africa signed and we've ratified. And then any offence referred to in the Regulation of Foreign Military Assistance Act or the prohibition of mercenary activities and the regulation of certain in a country of armed conflict. Then there you have a category of offences that may be addressed, which means there is discretion on the part of the DPCI. The national priority offences set out in the schedule, the Act, for which a provincial commission requests the national head of the directorate to prevent or to investigate, may be addressed by the directorate, but it must be dependent on the following factors. One is the monetary value of the case. Two is the complexity of the case. Three is the extent of the case. Four is the public interest. Five is urgency, and then whether in fact the crime was committed in an organized fashion. Now the difficulty you say is these terms are not defined except for organized fashion. What do we mean by the complexity of the case? If we can handle the detective at the station and over the case to the works, what makes the case complex? How do we know the case, the complex case? And what must be the financial threshold, for instance, of a case that goes to the works? Is it 5 million? I think it's currently the threshold. And then the policy guidelines for referral of offences by the National Commissioner. There is such section in the guidelines. The prioritisation of the offence must be aligned, as I said earlier, with the declared strategic priorities of the Department of Police and the National Commissioner of SAPS. The report of such priority offences must be in writing and must be accompanied where possible by an affidavit and supporting documents that contain prima facie evidence of the commission of crime. And then due consideration must be given by the National Commissioner to what is set out in paragraph 7 of the guidelines in order to ensure that serious crime, commercial crime and corruption are being attended to by the directorate. And then you have a particular national priority offences that is not elected by the national head of the directorate. These are offences which a provincial commissioner requests the national head of the DPCI to investigate or to prevent, but the head does not accede to. An important category check. And these are any offences referred to in Chapter 2, 3 and 4 of the Prevention of Organized Crime Act. These are crimes that the provinces and the stations can be investigated. Any offence referred to in Section 13F of the Drugs and Drug Trafficking Act, any offence related to dealing in or smuggling of ammunition, firearms, explosives or armaments, and the unlawful possession of such firearms, explosives and armaments. And then any offence contemplated in Chapter 2 and Section 34 of the Prevention of and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act of 2004. And then any offence with a punishment may be imprisonment for life. And then in respect of offences reported to the directorate under the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act, the National Labour Directorate shall select cases which must be investigated by the directorate, taking into account offences mentioned in paragraph 7 and all other reported matters shall be directed to the relevant provincial commissioner for investigation. I think what they're intending to do here is that the CCI cannot investigate all crimes except for national priority ones. We talk about those priorities that are committed, those crimes that are committed in an organized fashion. Some of the issues for the committee, I think that the committee ought to look at for tomorrow when they do come. Should there be a financial threshold for cases that the PIC should be dealing with? This is only to prevent any matter that appear to be that of organized crime from being referred to SAPS. See, the culture in SAPS, and maybe the commissioner can confirm, if they don't want to investigate the case, they hand it over to the DPCI and say, you must investigate this. And so I think that is to prevent that from happening. And there must be certain amounts, and I think the threshold is 5 million rand for it to be considered a serious crime. The guidelines do not currently make provision for a criminal business chain approach to be adopted during investigations into organized crime. Currently, if we're looking at organized crime, we have to look at the value chain of organized crime and how it happens. And I've done some preliminary discussions with members of the DPCI to ask them about this particular approach, because I know that they adopted this approach where they look at the criminal business value chain of the transactions. And that's important because when you look at the transactions, you can follow the money through the paper trail, if there is a paper trail. This approach allows for the analysis of crime, and should this approach be considered in view of the fact that the analysis of crime threats, because they should do an analysis of the crime threat as a crime threat assessment, as contained in 6.1, is a requirement for the selection of priority offence. And in Section 17F of Act makes provision for secondment of government officials from other departments and to work in a multidisciplinary manner. They are already doing this with what's called the anti-corruption task team, and where they have the revenue services, they have the DPCI, they have the financial intelligence centers, and they have crime intelligence as part of this anti-corruption task team. And there has to be provision, while there's a provision for it in the Act, they have added that up in the policy chain. So the committee should consider inserting similar provisions in the policy guidelines to allow for such a multidisciplinary approach. The guidelines also should define what the indicators of complexity should be, because how would you decide what are the indicators that you will know as a provincial commissioner or the head of detectives that the matter is too complex for your detectives to investigate at the station level, and that it must be sent up to the DPCI. Yeah, those are the provisional comments that I have on this. And then just noting that this was by the portfolio committee in July this year, without any amendments. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Honourable members, my name is Gisbert, with the presentation. Honourable Zimande.
Thank you, Chair. You see, Chair, I must cough and talk so that my comrade and colleague and friend hears that. I'm still intact, Chair. No, I think for the purposes of this one, Chair, as it is, it's more of the guidelines. And I think they're quite complex, Chair. In terms of engaging them quite meaningfully, I think in terms of our the content of the program, Chair, we do have to going forward look into how we go to process it. But I think, Chair, the same approach with the previous bill that perhaps we let them the presentation that they do it, and then I think MEP in terms of whether there's need assess in terms of whether there's need for further engagement on this one, because see the problem with the presentations of today is that we whether we like it or not in terms of the sections, the NA has a greater role because this one is I think they are both at 75 it is at section 75. Now the NA decides whether to accept or not to accept what we say. You know, so in essence, we are limited in terms of where, in terms of scope, and the finality on the matters. Just to for ourselves to be clear, change when we map out and engage the department tomorrow on this presentation, that we can say. But the NA, if they reject, they just need a two-thirds majority to pass without what we said. That remains a position in terms of Section 25. So, Chair, for this one, I'm just saying that I'm proposing that we don't and perhaps further engage after the presentations or during the presentation of this DPCI. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honourable members, I think we agree with the proposal by Honourable Nzimande. And this brings us to the end of the meeting. The meeting is adjourned till tomorrow, 10 o'clock. Thank you very much.
The DPCI is after the question to the previous, and that's 6:35. Okay, the DPCI is after the question.